Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
All right. Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and this is your host, Dave, and, well, the other guys are off this week. They all both had family obligations, but we know we're still dedicated to bring you an episode every week, and we have a returning guest this week, two of them, and then I was doing some checking, and they were on the show 2 years ago in May. They are the creators of Blood and Dust, The Life and Undeath of Judd Glenny. And of course, I'm talking about Adam Orndorff and Mike Martin. How you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for having us back on, Dave. We appreciate it.
Very well. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. So when we last talked, you guys were running a Kickstarter to get some money up to work on the book. And the last I checked, you guys did hit your goal on the Kickstarter.
We did. We did. Yeah, we hit the goal and delivered on our Kickstarter. I believe we started sending out fulfillment packages around the August, September timeframe or so of 2014 when we completed.
Cool. So how have things been going with the book then?
It has been a kind of crazy ride. You know, when we were doing it, it was our very first thing that we had ever done. And, you know, when we came on the show, you know, we were just trying to get folks to support and to, you know, give us a shot at trying to put our book out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it went surprisingly well. Adam and I did our very first con in where we were, you know, vending in 2014 in November at Tucson. And the book was very well received. We actually we had the intention of putting out the books, but we didn't know it was going to be quite as popular as it turned out to be.
Oh, cool. And,
yeah. So, you know, it really kind of kicked us into high gear after Tucson in 2014. So we decided that we were going to go ahead and continue on with the series. But it's been kind of a crazy ride. When we wanted to go ahead and continue on, we wanted to use our original artist, Rudy Vasquez, who had drawn the art for issue one years mm-hmm. prior. And he wasn't able to continue, so we had to get a new artist. So we picked up Roy Allen Martinez to do the art from then on out.
Oh, okay, cool. And how many issues have you guys worked on then since then?
Well, we ended up having him do issue two for us, and the thing that we got was, as we were starting to get pencils in for issue two, as we started kind of showing around the pencils, people went kind of crazy. Their main feedback that we got was, because, you know, if you remember, the original one was not colored. It was done in black and white.
Right, right.
And the feedback was, if we colored Roy's pages, then we were going to have something there. So we went from a couple of guys that were kind of trying to figure it out to a couple of guys that all of a sudden had something really good in their hands and had to build a team around it. So, you know, Roy was the first piece of the team, and then Raymond Lee came in to do, the coloring work. And then Kel Nuttall finished out the team for creative wise. And so we debuted issue two at Phoenix Comic Con in 2015 mm-hmm. and showed it to Action Lab, who we had tabled next to at Phoenix Fan Fest in 2014. Showed it to him after he'd already seen issue one, and they signed us right away to start doing the book for Action Lab's Danger Zone imprint.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, basically for them, it's changed from us being, you know, indie creators and kind of getting it out to we actually had to have a schedule and timeframes around
right.
that. We've got the first three issues are done. They are issue one releases August 3rd at your local comic book store. So you can go, it's available in previews right now. So
oh, cool.
if you go to your local store, you can ask for it. So August, September, and October are issues one, two, and three. And then we're going to do a trade back paperback, collecting them together for November and December. And then January, February, March is issues 4, 5, and 6. And then the trades following that.
Oh, wow. Official. So what was that like, going from being a couple independent guys, kind of taking your time with putting it together, finding an artist, to, all right, now you're working with an imprint. Boom, boom, boom. We want issues out.
Amazing. It was, it's so much more fun to have somebody there who's got your back, who's going to take care of a lot of the things that they have a lot more ends with, and mm-hmm. it makes it a lot easier. So now we focus on more of the creative aspects. Mike has an amazing story that's going to come after the initial arc, but it frees up a lot more as far as just our overall abilities and things we can do now.
Right.
Yeah. It was kind of a trip though. I mean, you know, the there's plus and minus. As an independent guy, you know, or a couple of guys, we're, you know, when we got it out, we get it out. If you see it as a con and we had another issue out, then you were excited. Now it is, okay, we have a schedule. We have costs. I mean, this is certainly, it's not cheap making the funny books. You know, the folks that work with us, you know, we pay. And so that's been the harder part of the blessing, is the, oh God, how do I get the money together for this to make it to my schedule?
Right, right.
So it's been a mixed bag, but knowing that you know it's going to get printed, that it'll get distributed, that it has all the channels open to it, made it so much more where we weren't trying to figure out those pieces of it, and we could just focus on our story and putting together the best story absolutely possible. That made it a lot more fun and easy to do.
Wow. I mean, it's so cool to hear that you guys have succeeded in this way. Because, I mean, I've been, you know, involved in the comic book industry for a long time. And I know a lot of people, independents, I see them at a convention, they've got issue one. And then I'll see them a year later and they still just have issue one, you know. Or maybe they've got issue two. And then I see them a year later and they have issue one and two. And they're telling me about issue three that's going to be coming out. So it's really cool that, you know, you guys got picked up and now you have a plan. And it's something, you know, again, we've talked about on this podcast a lot in the past about independence versus working for a company. Do you feel that having a deadline is actually a good thing?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a good thing. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny, man, in the comic world. It's an interesting mix of folks, man. You know, when you work with creators, and I guess it's not even just comic world, it's just working with creatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the perfect mix is kind of hard to get. Adam and I are a great example of what a good partnership looks like. Whereas Adam is very strong in the lore, the skill, the knowledge, the history, everything about comics. And that side of it, I'm very business oriented and been very focused on this is where the money comes from and this is where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And mixing the two of us together has been great. I always feel bad for people that are really out there kind of do it on their own, and creatives don't often get the business side of it, and vice versa. You know, the business side doesn't always get the creative side.
I get lost in my head. That's what he's trying to say. There's no way. I'm going to tell you right now, had I not had him there for the first Kickstarter, there's no way in hell that thing works out. I'm not going to lie to you, because seriously, there. Number one, I think I was off with my shipping, the shipping goal or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Everything was kind of scary.
Yeah. I was all, it's just like, okay, well, I went on the internet and I found out that this is what it costs to ship it here. And he's like, no. And then, so like, I'd say halfway through, the administrative side really got taken over. And I focus more on the social media aspect and really pushing and getting some of the larger pledges that we got. But I'm going to tell you right now, I am business oriented to an extent, but I love working on the back end much more, working on the creative side,
right,
way more than I'll ever enjoy working on the business.
No, I mean, I do get that. You know, I've been a musician for many years and I've been on a lot of different bands, and I've been in bands where we can sit there and jam for days, you know, just playing around and something sounds cool, but like we, you know, it gets thrown away, whatever. And then when we finally sit there and say, oh, we should record a demo, and we set that deadline, like, okay, we want to record a demo in 3 months. Then you start getting serious and like, okay, we have to finish these songs. We can't just,
mm-hmm.
you know, be right, absent-minded about it. It has to get done. And You know, that's a tough thing. It's finding that balance between creativism and business and finding out, like, to get this done, I've got to set goals to myself, you know?
Yeah, it was funny. We did a panel here at PhoenixCon a couple of weeks ago, and it was a Danger Zone panel. So it's Jason Martin, Nick Marino. I'm spacing on Zombie Trump. Anyway, so it's a bunch of us that are there, and we've all got, you know, we've all got publishing deals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've all got pretty, they've got successful books. Our books is coming out here pretty quickly. We're all feeling good. And it was funny to see how many people out in that audience thought that we all didn't have day jobs, that we all did this for a living 24/7.
Right.
And we're all kind of laughing because Adam made a point of, if you call in for tech support, it's very likely he's working on something blood and dust. And that was kind of a fun and good thing for people to see, is that, you know, yeah, we have to work this in around all the rest of our jobs. And my day job is very involved. We're actually sitting at our day job right now, doing this from there. So, you know, that's kind of the funny thing, is people don't understand how much work that you have to put in. I put in, you know, 8+ hours at my very demanding day job. I by the time I get home, I don't want to think anymore. But cool, let's pony up and let's saddle through what we got to do.
No, that's true. I mean, it's when you're a creative person, it's tough to get to that point where your creative, whatever creative endeavor you're on, can pay the bills fully. It takes a while to get there. People don't always understand that in today's world. And it takes a lot of hard work, you know?
Yeah, actually, Adam just looked it up. It's Dan Mendoza, who does Zombie Tramp. And Zombie Tramp's one of Danger Zone's number one titles.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Dan when I met him for the first time last year at San Diego, because literally, we don't know. I mean, I asked Dan, I'm like, so is this worth it? And he's like, well, I've been their number one book for a little while. I'm going to be quitting my job pretty soon and move into Washington, because he lived in L.A. And here a few months ago, he moved to Washington, quit his job, and now is full-time doing Zombie Tramp.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right? To be able to do the creative thing full-time, but, you know, understanding the work that takes to get there. It's, you know, we live in this world of social media and instant fame on YouTube and all these things that there's like a lot of young people that thinks, you know, oh, well, I just, you know, put a video out there and I'll be famous and making money. And it's like, no.
And they may be right.
Yep.
they may be right, man. It probably won't be in comic books, but I did see where people are actually making money eating food on YouTube. And
the kid with the toys.
For that. So, hey, unboxing videos. Yeah,
unboxing videos.
What passes for entertainment nowadays.
Yeah, no doubt. All I am mad is I didn't think of it first. that's my only.
Cool. So you guys are doing your own book. You're getting it out there, but have you ever had a desire to work for one of the big two? And if so, what would be a book that you guys would want to work on?
You go first.
Me? No. I really don't. Here's the thing that I've learned in these past 2 years, man. The thing that I've learned in these past 2 years, because you got to understand that we've ended up becoming friends with people that have had very long careers with DC. I used to do a podcast with Ryan Augustin,
mm-hmm.
You know, for years. He did The Flash. He did Gotham by Gaslight and all these other things.
Yes.
And the reason that I say no to that isn't because – let's face it, man, it would be really cool to do some of those characters. It really, really would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if they drove up to my house with a truck full of money and said, here's the Punisher, please start, that'd be dope. I'm going to say no to that, simply because the thing that we've learned is we love doing our books. We love doing our story. We love owning all of it. And I love that there is nobody that's going to come back and tell us to do something different. That's the greatest thing about being with Action Lab and Danger Zone. They have absolutely no input into what goes in our book. All they do is facilitate the agreements and help us on the back end of things. But they have no input on what goes in our book at all. And there is no greater freedom for a creative than that. So no, not for me.
Cool.
I am different. But there's a caveat to that.
Okay.
I have blood and dust stories that I still want to be told. So if I had to choose between the two, I would say no, I wouldn't. But if I have the freedom to do both, I would. I grew up a Marvel zombie. I grew up a kid loving Marvel books. So I would do, in a heartbeat, I would do a Daredevil book and I would do a Wolverine book. I grew up, my first comic that I read was a Wolverine comic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got a couple of stories from that I'd want to tell. And as far as Daredevil goes, again, the same thing. I mean, I've been reading Daredevil since 1991, I think. So it's a lifelong thing for me, just about. It's when I first started reading comics. Those were the big two for me.
Right.
So I would definitely pick it up and run with it. But again, there would be that caveat that there's something. It's one of those things where you never let go of the first thing.
Right.
And I would never let go of Blood and Dust. Number one, I poured so much of myself into this. Mm-hmm. And I know Mike's the same way. He's poured everything into this. When we were doing the Kickstarter, I used to get off of work at 11 and I go home and I didn't pages until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. I've got a 5-year-old daughter who was two or three.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets up religiously at 6:30. So I was sleeping 4.5 hours a night.
Yes.
Because I was up at night managing the Kickstarter, social media, setting up my Hootsuite Twitter and Facebook posts, and also inking pages. So there's no way that I would ever let go of that, but that would be something. And it wouldn't require a truckload of money. Look, you give me a one-shot or a four-issue miniseries, just the fact that I got to man the helm and give me the ability to potentially choose my creative team, I'm in.
But I think that's something that's we get asked a lot, mm-hmm. you know, and they talk about it at panels a lot. And I think that's where people really get lost in thinking that everybody that does comics eventually wants to land at the big two, or quite honestly, it's the big three. We need to stop acting like Image isn't just as
right.
big as,
no,
as
no,
DC.
That's true.
You know, so, you know, that's a common question. And the answer to me is always no. It is never my goal, and it is never the thing that I set up. But on the flip side of that, man, I see creatives that have given their lives. That there's this cat named Eric Escobel that we know that is a great dude, lives in squalor in LA and keeps pounding it out and keeps hitting books for DC, keeps getting in there, and he's making his
Archie
way.
Archie Comics too.
Yeah, Archie. So he's done a ton of Nickelodeon. He's done a ton of great stuff, and that's what he shoots for. And that's what he goes for. And that is awesome. And that is Eric. And that's what he's shooting for. It's his path. Yeah, exactly.
No. And it's cool. I kind of ask it because I've seen both sides of it. And I know a lot of creative people that, you know, got lucky out of the gate and got picked up right away to do a book for Marvel or DC that are now like, yeah, that was fun, but I really want to do my own thing. You know?
Well, and that's where Image comes in. I mean, everybody gets into DC and Marvel and then goes and makes their money at Image.
That's true. Yeah, that is true. But yeah, and because of the way they're set up, you're free to go in and pitch a book and do your own book and have it published through them. So
you look at Brian K. Vaughan. He started off with DC and Marvel, made a huge name for himself, then just walked away.
Yep.
Went over to Image, put out, what's it called? With Fiona Staples, Saga.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And now the dude's making money hand over fist doing that.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Snyder makes a lot more on Witches than he does on Batman. We've all seen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's actually another interesting thing and a funny thing I talk about all the time with other new creators. I just had this conversation the other day. It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to put your book to Image. And I said, go have a look and tell me the last new person that you've never seen anywhere else on Image.
Right.
Then rethink your strategy.
And if they are there, let me know what their level of success is.
Yeah.
Right. No, that's definitely true. Yeah. I mean, and guys like Eric Larson with Savage Dragon, I mean, what he's done with that book, he would never be able to do that working for Marvel or DC. You know, this is a character who has aged, you know, he's
right.
And what is going on in Eric's life happens in not a direct translation, but happens.
Say.
Right. But like when he was younger and, you know, in his 20s and he was writing the book, that was a reflection of him. Now that he's middle aged, the mm-hmm. character's middle aged and it's a reflection of his feelings. Like, you know, you couldn't make Superman middle-aged and questioning, you know, things in his life, or Spider-Man, yet they would never allow that. But
but on the flip side of it, they also have, you know, I mean, and that's the other part about writing those characters, man. 75 years worth of characters written by some of the best writers in history. And then I'm supposed to follow up with that. You know, I mean, Kingdom Come, you know, Superman was aged and cranky. Batman's been aged and cranky with Frank. I mean, these guys, I mean, that's the problem, is they have gone from birth to age. And I don't have enough of an ego to think that I have anything extra to add to them. But I have plenty of stuff to talk about Judd.
Right. So go ahead, Adam.
I was going to say, Eric is like the perfect example of a guy who does, he is the modern day Jack Kirby.
Yes.
Look at what Eric does. Eric writes, Eric draws, Eric inks. If he had time, he probably would color and letter the whole thing. And he's not doing it regular size either. He's doing it on these much, much, much larger sheets.
Right.
Which means he's got time for more work and more room. I mean, he literally is your modern day Jack Kirby with like the way Kirby did Commandy. Kirby did everything with that.
Right.
The only things he didn't do was letter and ink it, but and color it. But I mean, I think he even inked some of this stuff. Bottom line is that Eric is, going back to your second question that you had about working for the big two, he is the staple of what it is to be. I don't even think he could be considered indie anymore. Do you?
Oh God, no.
No. I mean, no.
He's still not mainstream though, and he won't, and he's not. He is mainstream, but
he's the
not.
Epitome of creator owned.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's been, you know, so long since you guys were on the show, and we have a little bit of a bigger audience now too. Why don't you give everyone the elevator pitch on Blood and Dust?
So Blood and Dust is a story about the first American vampire. He was a very bad man in the Civil War, and when the war ended, he went out west to try and find a little bit of healing and find a little redemption. And what he did was end up going on a spirit quest and became possessed by the spirit of the vampire. So for about 40 years or so, he terrorized the Old West and ran it until he found that he had descendants he didn't realize he had. And upon going back and seeing them through a set of circumstances, end up turning them. So now he has a great granddaughter that he keeps chained up in the attic. And he has to take care of his great grandkids that are 6, 8, and 10. They don't age. They don't mature. They don't become wise like Claudia in Interview with a Vampire or anything. They just stay 6, 8, and 10, little pains in the butt forever. And this man that used to be the terror of the West is now reduced to being the world's angriest babysitter.
I just can't imagine that. Yeah, no.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing, is that's the reaction that we've been getting. It's funny, if we pitch the story, you know, if you're walking by at a Comic-Con and you've got kids with you and you hear that story, you become very interested because you think, oh my God, what happens if my kids never got older and never matured? So it strikes a chord with them, and it strikes a chord with the horror fans, you know.
We
don't have sparkly vampires. There's no love stories in ours whatsoever. There is no, you know, bemoaning and wishing I were mortal and things like this. It is a very angry old man that is stronger than anything anybody's ever seen, and little kids that he tries to just keep under control and keep his house in check.
Much, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a unique twist on the vampire stories. Do you get any feedback from, you know, you can't see my air quotes, you know, true vampire fans that are like, oh, come on, the vampires aren't like that. Didn't you read I, Lestat or Interview with a Vampire?
So we were at the Phoenix Comic Con, and I was manning the table at this point because Mike had to go get something to eat. And it was the funniest thing in the world. This kid walks up to me and he tells me, he goes, so what's your book about? And I give him the pitch. I exactly as you just heard it, because we've done it a million times now. Mike's just much better at it than I am. And he goes, what rules are you following? I said, excuse me? And he goes, the rules, what rules are you following? I said, no. And he goes, what do you mean no? And I said, no, we're not following rules. We're making up rules. So the only rule is that it's really, really, really super hard to kill them. We haven't figured out yet what kills them. And they still drink blood. That's the only rules we've established as far. You should have seen the way this kid's eyes lit up. He was stoked. He's like, I'm in. I'll take all of them. Because we don't give a crap about what's been established. We respect right. it, but at the end of the day, we are setting the rules for what happens. That's what it is to be creative. We're making our own rules.
Yeah, when I went up and did the announcement at San Diego Comic-Con, so we're at the Action Labs panel, and they're announcing all their books for the coming year and everything, and I get up and start talking about Blood and Dust. And afterwards, I did have some very hardcore vampire fans hit me up afterwards and want to talk about it. And it was kind of similar to Adam's talk track. You know, they're like, well, you know, isn't there going to be, you know, isn't the cabal or isn't the ruling body going to be upset? You're not supposed to turn children or whatever. And I just start laughing. I'm like, yeah, none of that works for us.
The ruling cabal of Oklahoma.
Yeah, exactly. we do have stuff that those things are out there. But, you know, remember, we state he's the first American vampire.
Right.
And that leads into some interesting stuff for later on down the road. Nothing in these initial six books, but later on down the road that will come into play.
But at the end of the day, it'll be when we decide and it'll be the rules that we put out there. You know, it's not going to be, oh, Anne Rice said we couldn't do this, so we can't do that.
Or right.
What's her face? The sparkly vampire lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not happening either.
Right. No. And that's, you know, why I asked the question, because it's at the end of the day, it's silly. Like when people got angry at Twilight because the vampires sparkled, it was like, but who said that there was a rule that it was the sunlight hurt them? Like, why do you have to follow the stories that came before? These are fictional characters.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's kind of the thing. And, you know, when you see how Judd turns and everything, you'll see that there's never been a turn like that in any vampire history. I've never seen any story that did what we did, how we've done it. And, you know, you still have to have some of those elements to still keep them vampires. And I think that's kind of key. You have to have certain elements that keep them vampires. But the most common statements we're getting from reviewers and everybody as they're coming out. My most favorite one we get is, this is not like anything I've ever seen. I've never seen anything.
Oh, there's the guy that absolutely dislikes all horror stories and vampire stories.
Yeah.
And in his review, he opens with that. So it's like the lawyer that says, you're going to hate my client, but you're going to know that he didn't do it.
Right.
You know, it was one of those situations. He absolutely despises all things horror and vampire, and he was into it in a big, bad way.
Oh, cool. That's really good to hear. Yeah, no, and it's funny, just the you know, last point about vampire rules. One of my favorite authors is Jim Butcher. I don't know if either of you have read The Dresden Files, which is an urban – go ahead.
No, I've heard of him, but I haven't read him.
Yeah, it's an urban fantasy book. He's a wizard in modern day, works as kind of a private eye. And there's, of course, fairies and goblins and vampires and all in the books. And the way they did it is there's, you know, different courts of vampires, black, white, red, and I can't remember what the fourth one is. And essentially each one has elements from the stories, but basically, like, you know, he's like, well, Bram Stoker just wrote a book. Like, it was based on things he heard about the vampires, but, you know, it's not true. And trying to say, like, yeah, I'm acknowledging Bram Stoker, I'm acknowledging the existence of those stories, but I'm taking what I want from that and making my own thing from that, you know.
And yeah, I you just have to. There's so much history, man. You want to pay homage to the history of it. I love vampires ever since I was a little kid. I mean, I've read about every book that I could get my hands on, you know, growing up on them. So, you know, you have to recognize the history of it. But if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, then you become a slave to it.
Right.
My favorite vampire is Cassidy from Preacher. And the reason why there's an issue when he's going through San Francisco where he's talking. I don't remember who he's talking to, but he's the guy's like, so, oh, it was in New Orleans and he was running with the children of the blood or something goofy like that. Mm-hmm. And he's making fun of him. And he's like, well, what about garlic? And he goes, what about it? And he goes, doesn't it harm you or scare you? He's like, no, I love this stuff. There's a place in San Francisco called the Stinking Rose. And he goes, I go there every year. And he's going on and on about all the stuff that's garbage. And the only thing that really hurts him is sunlight. Everything else is garbage.
Right.
So.
Well, I guess it's also akin to writing your own thing and then writing for the big two. You know, writing for Superman. Like, yes, you love the character and you would love the ability to write for him. But you're also, at the same time, confined by the rules of Superman, you know,
right.
and the established history. Like, you have to use his powers. He has to be hurt by kryptonite, all that, you know, whatever DC's saying at that moment is Superman. That's mm-hmm. what you have to write. Where mm-hmm. with Blood and Dust, vampires, you know, drink blood and are really strong and who knows what else yet.
I think there was a writer, I don't remember who it was, but he got in trouble with DC and they made him rewrite because he did something with Superman. I don't remember what it was. It was like Superman with stubble or something like that. And they sent him back an editorial note saying Superman can't be caught doing these things. And one of the things was with stubble or with facial hair or mm-hmm. it was using the bathroom. I can't remember what it was, but he was super perturbed by that.
Super deuce. Yeah. Superman does not drop super deuce.
Right, there you go.
Superman doesn't go to the bathroom.
No super laws.
Oh, poor Superman. You wear that tight costume all day, you know.
Well, you know, you get all clammy and sweaty. And,
exactly.
You know, and then if you want to go with the ancient arguments of, you know, who can Superman actually sleep with, the only woman strong enough would actually be Lois Lane. Or not Lois Lane, but Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's going to blow out the back of Lois Lane or something.
Yep.
Oh, poor Lois.
She's getting changes.
Though she's back, right? They undid the new 52.
I have no idea.
That's what we keep hearing. I mean, that's the thing is we're always asked, you know, what are you guys reading and stuff? And we're like, other people make comics other than us? Because right now, Blood and Dust is the only comic that I know about on the planet. So the only one I certainly make time to read. I mean, I hear all kinds of things going on about everywhere, but...
Unless it's like Hellboy or anything Marvel and DC from like 1997 and backwards. But yeah, I have... It's like you said, I don't have time for it. And the other part of it, too, it's just some of it's just not really for me.
Well,
not anymore.
I will say this, you know, kind of the similar subject, but a little different. I've heard Rebirth is really great. I've heard it fixed a lot of things with the new 52 that people weren't happy with. It looks like they took a lot of great care and a lot of really great effort to really try and do something well with it. And I applaud the efforts and I think it's awesome. At the same time, the thing that I would really encourage people to do, and this is where we're gonna be a tad bit of a streetwalker for our publisher, but at the same time, Action Lab put out Actionverse, where they took, and this is what was really cool about it, they took all their creator-owned properties, and they all went and played in the same sandbox together. So, you know, you had Molly Danger and Stray, and, you know, all these others that are just like Adam and I. Look, we own these. These are our babies. And they got them all in a room. They got them playing the sandbox and created the Actionverse to where these creator-owned comics kind of crossed over. That's pretty damn cool. And considering that we've never seen something like that happen in creator-owned comics, to me, that was a much more interesting event than Rebirth or Civil War II or whatever else they're doing now to try and get people interested in it. And I think that's kind of the cool thing is all that history is still there. You know, Rudy, the guy that drew our original book, was lamenting that he went in a comic book store and didn't know what to pick up anymore because of how they've messed up Spider-Man or, you know, according to him, air quoting. But that's the thing is all those books are still there. All those stories are still there. You know, my first books were the very original Batman and Superman story. Those books are still there. So all of that's still there. So instead of people being angry about a Rebirth or another reboot, look to outside of those and see what else is out there. And I'll bet you find something you'll like a lot more.
Right. I mean, Actionverse Volume 1, the event 5 years in the making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only one force in the universe can bring Jake Roth, Molly Danger, Midnight, Tiger, and Stray together. Who is the mysterious Cascade, and what terrible power does he hold? So, there you go, people. Go pick that up at your local comic book shop, or head on over to actionlabcomics.com and buy it today.
Just support something different.
I mean,
and don't get me wrong, I loved Scott Snyder's Court of Owls. That's one of the very few, mm-hmm. if not the only, New 52 thing that I read was Court of Owls. And I absolutely loved it, but everything else I couldn't get into. And a lot of it, like Civil War II, as much as I respect what they're doing, and I, these creators, I will never badmouth something somebody else did. It's not for me. It doesn't pick up. I want something different. That's where I love what Action Lab's doing. Action Lab is they're crossing over places that you haven't seen before.
Right. No. And yeah, it just Civil War II is definitely, oh, we're doing a Civil War movie?
Yeah.
Quick, brand it.
Yeah, exactly. Let's be honest. That's totally just a money grab. And of course, the other big thing that came out from Marvel, we know that after the Civil War storyline, they killed off Captain America. Then they brought him back, but they didn't have the super soldier serum, so he aged. Now they've fixed that. Yeah. He's back to himself.
He's doing something.
You get Action, not Action Comics. You get Captain America, Steve Rogers, Captain America number one, and they reveal that he's a Hydra agent.
Yeah, Hail Hydra.
And always has been.
And always has been. Time he was a little kid.
And okay, so here's my deal with that. Look, I get it. You've written a character for 75 years, and really, it is carte blanche. It's an intellectual property at this time. And if you don't understand that we refer to these things as IP, then you're not close. But these are IPs. These are intellectual properties. Just like Han Solo and Chewbacca and anything else, it is just an intellectual property of these guys. And the thing that's a bummer about all of it, and this is the only part where I have any problem, because other than that, look, I don't care. You know, it is your property. You do with it as you will. The only problem I have is that it was created by a couple of Jewish dudes to really to be an anti-Hitler and anti-German thing. And just somehow I got this feeling that they're probably a little pissed off about that one. Would they be around today to really say something about that one?
Super pissed.
So there's my only thing that I have to say is, you know, I think that's kind of a kick in the cojones to the original creators of that one.
You think Jack Kirby might have something to say about that?
Yeah, especially since he fought in World War II.
Right.
I think that might be a tad bit of a problem. So
yeah.
But who am I?
Yeah. And again, we all know it's a stunt. I mean,
of course it is.
If you break it down, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But we'll see how they work their way out of this corner they painted themselves in.
And it'll probably turn into a cool story.
And look, they did the Clone Saga.
Right.
They did. How many Wolverines so far? Like at least.
Well, then there's the Skrulls.
Oh, them, yeah.
Let's not forget Skrulls.
Secret Invasion.
Yes.
Which had like 82 parts to it. again, they killed Captain America, but he wasn't dead. They shot him backwards in time.
Do you see why I am not interested in picking up any of these properties and trying to do something new with them?
And why mine would be a one-shot.
We had before that, we had Avengers Disassembled and then House of M.
Oh, yeah, and then they killed Hawkeye, but he didn't die. And then he came back, but got turned into QB things.
Ooh, quick note on House of M, though, is our artist Roy worked on that one.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah, he was that, and he also did Iron Fist, one of my favorite Marvel
games. Do you know which title during House of M, or was it the main story?
No, I really don't. He did a brief stint both with DC, Marvel, and Image. So just a little fun note. Roy and Raymond, our colorist, are both Wilth Portacio's proteges. So they both went to Wilth's school in the Philippines. They're both very close with Wilth. So there's just a little side note on that one. That's kind of the school that the artwork's coming from for us.
Roy did Decimation.
Decimation, there you go.
Okay, cool. Well, there you go. What more does people need, right?
Right.
Okay, so you guys don't read you don't really read the comics. I mean, you just keep abreast of what's going on. How about the movies?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That I can still, we can still wedge in movies.
Okay. What was the last one you guys saw?
Oh, I saw Civil War. We pretty much catch them all when they come out.
Okay, cool.
If I had it, the most recent thing, though, was in movies, it's Catching Up on the Flash.
Oh, yes.
I love that, man. That to me is exactly what comics should be, and I don't think ever could be.
Well, speaking of the comic book storylines and keeping up on them, I don't know if you – how are you caught up on season 2?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was revealed today, Grant Gustin tweeted it out, that episode 1 of season 3 is going to be called Flashpoint. So,
really nice.
Please make this happen.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing that's cool also about that, I went and saw An Evening with Kevin Smith right after he finished doing his directing gig on The Flash.
Oh, okay.
And Kevin was just enamored as he could be with The Flash and the cast and doing that show. And now, obviously, he's so enamored with it because he was talking about he's kind of done his career in reverse when most people try and end up in movies. He started in movies and now he's ending up in television.
Right.
He was talking about, how just awesome the cast is and their dedication to really making that the best show. I mean, Brian, it was so funny. Brian and I would sit there and talk, and I think we actually talked about it on our podcast for a little bit. It's weird for him watching them talking about things like the Speed Force and stuff, which is stuff that him and Mark sat around and came up with.
Right, right.
You know, so for watching that show for them, it's kind of weird to watch them. And it's almost like, and this is another reason it's kind of a bummer to be a creator and still working on those kind of shows, because at no point was there any credit to, Speed Force created by Brian Augustin or Mark Waid or anything like that.
No.
And that's never going to be there. But, they're sitting there, he just looks at his wife and he goes, I made that.
No, that's, oh my God, that is so true. Cause, I'll never forget when they introduced Deathlok on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. And it was the same year that he was introduced. I ran into Rich Buckler at a convention, and I was like, oh, what do you think of them using Deathlok on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? He's like, oh, it was pretty cool. I'm like, so did they call you up and talk to you about it beforehand?
Nope.
I said,
intellectual property.
Uh-oh. He's like, I'm not even sure if I got a credit in the a mention in the credits. I don't think I did, but it's good. I like the way they did it.
Have they even officially called him Deathlok yet?
Yeah, they have.
Okay. Yeah.
It was the Deathlok project that.
That's right. Yeah, and he had it was on the leg or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, it's tough when you come up with an idea like that, and it's owned by the company you work for. But
seriously, that's the bummer. I hate to keep harping on it, man, but that is such a depressing thing for me. That it just totally makes me want to stay away from it. I would be just beside myself if I came up with something. Let's say I'm Bruce Timm and I create Harley Quinn, right?
Right.
And now that's completely away from you. You great. You created it. You did it. You put it out there. And now she's turned into something completely different than what Bruce came up with.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there, watching one of your kids go and leave the house very inappropriately and you can't stop them.
I wonder if anyone's asked Bruce Timm. I mean, I'm sure they have. I just haven't seen anything. His opinion on their take on Harley for the movie.
He's always been very neutral about it. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He still works for him. So he doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually did a podcast. A Fat Man was very positive about the whole thing. At the end of the day, he knows we did something else. So there's no delusion.
Right. Do you think they could have got away with putting her in the full Jester costume?
No.
She moved. Are you talking about Suicide Squad?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Oh, God. No. That Suicide Squad's so far away from any of them, really. I mean, Enchantress. How the hell does that look like Enchantress?
Well, yeah, that's true.
I
think the only one looks true to himself is Croc.
And Croc doesn't even look right to me.
No.
So.
No.
Kind of. I mean, he doesn't have to look like a crocodile, but I think he looks like the one that Eduardo Risso drew for the one that he wrote with Brian Azzarello, or the one he drew rather. Yeah. He looks closer to that.
Yeah. Now Suicide Squad's just that. It's like, hey, we've heard there are these characters that have these properties. Cool, go make them. Should we read any of the backstory? Hell no. Go make them.
Not in the least. Nope. Just when you go to Suicide Squad the movie, don't look for anything. It's going to be fun. The trailer looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
But don't look for any of the backstory, because it's just not going to match.
Yeah.
Well, they gave us a movie with their top two characters fighting each other to death, and they stopped fighting because both their mothers are named Martha. So
Martha. Honestly, haven't even seen it yet.
Oh.
I just can't. I can't.
Nope.
I mean, I wanted to, dude. You have no idea how bad I wanted to see that movie. And as I saw and kept hearing more and more about what they were doing to it,
it'll be on Netflix eventually.
Yeah, I'll get the unrated version. I'll try it out that way. Maybe it'll be better. But here's the thing, man. Superman is an archetype. Superman is the original archetype for the big blue Boy Scout.
Yep. Right.
And when, like, in the Man of Steel, it was Man of Steel, right? Yep. Where he breaks Zod's neck and everything. I look at my wife and I'm like, what, he couldn't put his hands over his eyes? Couldn't have directed his head somewhere else? That's what he got down to, was snap his neck. And for all the arguments for Zack Snyder and everything else, Zack's done some amazing work. People can complain all you want, but he's done some kick-ass movies too. But yeah, I got to get on board with the Zack Snyder really hates Superman
thing. And here's the thing, is that when John Byrne wrote Man of Steel, he wrote the miniseries, Superman does kill them. He exposes them to the kryptonite and they die. My biggest issue was that he hates Superman for a whole different way, in that this is a super smart guy, Superman. Nobody thought to go and take this out to Death Valley, or where there aren't millions of people who are dying painfully,
right,
as buildings fall on them and laser beams are shooting out everywhere and
right,
and crap's just blowing up. No, you didn't think to just fly him out somewhere else.
Yeah.
Somewhere less populated. Kentucky.
Or less populated or less liked.
Yeah, less liked. You know, there's a novel idea. Just go to Kentucky. Go to... You know, it doesn't matter.
South Carolina. Nobody's going to miss South Carolina one little bit.
Well, we have breeders there. We have breeders there. They bought stuff.
Oh, do they? We love you guys. Just move.
You got a choice level. Zod just crashed through.
Yeah. I've read several articles and stuff, and I have to agree, man. I think Zack Snyder just honest to God hates Superman.
Pretty much.
And I think he hates him so much that he had to twist him into this really jacked up version of him. And Batman's already been so twisted up by Frank and history that now you just had two really, really pissed off good guys.
When Ben Affleck as Batman, who everybody, where the
thought
internet
was going to be horrible.
The internet collectively vomited in their mouth, that was announced, with the exception of about eight people. And that right there is the shining point of that movie that everyone keeps talking about. Something is wrong.
Yeah, I do keep wondering... if the rest of the movie was better, would Ben Affleck have looked as good as Batman? You know, it's one of those things. He was just so good by comparison to what we were watching, or was he really good as Batman?
From what I heard, he was really good. I haven't seen it either. I'm not.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it coming out. You know, I'm looking forward to the ultimate release and everything.
Maybe it'll be like the Daredevil movie. Daredevil movie, the standard theater version was terrible, but if you bought the extended version, it was really, really decent and edible. Not like circus peanuts.
Right.
Like that nasty candy, the marshmallow candy.
very true. And again, to your point about the just taking it out to Death Valley or the Grand Canyon or whatever.
Antarctica, wherever, man.
It was a little annoying that every time there was a big fight in a city type area, they made a point. Somebody gave an exposition of, oh, it's an abandoned area. It's an abandoned building. Like, oh.
So what is the only battles were in Detroit? It was only in Detroit. I get it. But
Metropolis, that hard up for me.
Yeah, no, it was just, that was very frustrating. It was like, oh, they just keep making a point of saying, oh, this is abandoned, so we don't have to worry about people dying. See, so they are heroes.
Yeah.
So when Zod is flying through buildings, just building after building, and they're collapsing, that entire 8-block area is all abandoned. Nobody there.
No, that's Man of Steel. No, this is in Batman v Superman.
I still caution it.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, come on, really? Oh, good thing that building's abandoned. All right.
Well, it's no different than Age of Ultron. You know, is it? Oh, look, this one's under construction. How quickly can I buy this building as I smash Hulk through it?
Uh-huh.
You know? Oh, that's true.
I'm pretty sure I've never seen any building close in less than 15 seconds.
Sold.
I've tried to buy a house, and I know what that is.
Can't get a soda at Circle K.
Well, I guess when you're offering cash, though.
Maybe.
And I agree, too, with the Suicide Squad. As long as you go in with the right expectations.
Which are none.
Yes.
Well, and I think the thing is that they've realized how bad they screwed it up. you know, they've made the changes. Basically, they've tried to find their Kevin Feige. I forget who they've named as
Jeff Johns.
Well, Jeff is one part of it, and then there's the movie guy. In addition to it, I think they've realized they've really screwed the pooch by trying to let Zack Snyder make everything dark. And you know, and this is coming from a guy that likes dark stories and likes dark comics and stuff. But
hopefully, hoping to make a lot of money off.
I think the other thing that was interesting that kind of came out of all that is that was also right about the time when Darwin Cook passed.
Right.
And I think the thing about Darwin Cook's passing happening at the same time as all of that is I think that a lot of people got to see that comic book characters didn't always look angry.
Yeah.
And they didn't always look like they were ready to go kick someone's ass. They had fun and they were supposed to be stories for all ages. And our story isn't a story for all ages. We're rated M. We're rated 17 and above, man. You should not be reading Blood and Dust if you're under 17. You shouldn't have to be 12 to read Superman. And I think that's kind of key. And I think that kind of was the thing that happened is that everybody realized that they had went way beyond where they should have went. They needed to bring some lightness and some happiness to it. Deadpool came out and you could see how fun a comic book movie could be, even though it certainly is not for kids either.
No.
So I think there was this kind of perfect storm that all happened. And I think everybody really, you know, looked around, or at least this is kind of how I imagine it. Everybody kind of looked around at Warner Brothers and in the DC and went, we went too far and we need to pull it back. And I think that's probably what you're going to see is a lot more fun and a lot more lightheartedness and the characters not being what Zack and company was trying to turn them into.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Because as we talked about earlier, they're doing the fun. They're doing the lightheartedness on TV.
Yep.
Look at The Flash. Yeah. That is a comic book, as close as you can get to a comic book turned into a TV show.
Absolutely, yep. Yeah.
It turned into any other form of comic book. Look at, even with Arrow. I mean, Arrow is pretty dark. I mean, he spends like half the first season killing everybody.
Right, the whole first season.
Yeah, putting arrows in people's chests.
Yeah.
And okay, so he stopped that, but...
But that was the thing. That was the beginning.
Yeah.
And that was them trying to do that. And then when they were ready to do The Flash, once again, it's just me in my mind and imagining what that production room looks like. But I think they went, we don't have to do that. We can honest to goodness make this the real Flash.
Yep.
And they gave it a shot and it blew it up. And by that means, I think Arrow has lightened up over the seasons quite dramatically. But I don't think they're ever going to get it light enough because they had to start off so dark.
Well, because, and also, I mean, you look at the character wasn't super jokey to begin with. He was all about civil rights and equality and things like that. So it's always going to have that heavy dramatic overtone. The Flash is so perfect, you know?
Well, that's actually a good lead into a question I was going to ask earlier. And it's something we kind of discussed on the podcast, I think, last week. No, you know what? We discussed it off air. Anyway, they're going to do Flashpoint. We all know this now, which is kind of an opportunity for them to reset a little bit on all their shows on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you think they're going to allow it to affect the other shows, or do you think they're going to try to keep them all separate and just do Flashpoint onto itself, which me personally, I don't think they can, you know?
Yeah, and I think the other wrench in the mix is Legends of Tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
Which I tapped out about halfway through.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't. Yeah, I tapped out about halfway through. I can't stand the White Canary character. Oh, my goodness, can I not stand her? And then just other things about that show. So I don't really like that one. But I think the Legends of Tomorrow also threw a hink in Flashpoint. Because you've already got time travel going on.
Yeah.
And you've already got timeline adjustments going on. So I could see them using it to either be some sort of fix to Flashpoint or something else that would go along with it. And I think that we've already seen alternate futures in Arrow too.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's just you've got a really creative group of people working on that. And I'm sure they're going to come up with something really cool. And that's the nice thing also is having faith in a show anymore, because I don't think we've had many faiths in many shows over the years. And I have absolute faith that at least on The Flash, they'll get it right.
Yeah, the only constant has been like The Walking Dead, that nobody's going to walk away happy. That's it. There's no such thing as a happy day there.
Yeah, yes. Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Oh, God. That one right there. Let's take your most popular character. We're going to stab him repeatedly. Have a little kid stab.
He kills off the main character in the first book, or the first season.
Yeah. But if you read the book, so that's how it rolls. They kept it true. There is no such thing as happy there.
Safe. There's nothing safe. I think that's kind of cool, though, man. I think that...
We're happy, though.
Well, getting back to us, which I like to talk about a lot.
That makes sense.
You know, we've been very deliberate that the kids are the only happy thing in our story at all. And the only reason they're happy is because the kids can't help themselves to be happy.
Blissfully unaware. Yeah. That's the best way to look at
it. Yeah. So I think that that's actually the reason we rated M for a book, wasn't that it's especially gory or especially there's no nudity. There's no big titted vampire broads or anything like that. We rated it mature because we have a mature story where we deal with very mature storylines that is going to have a lot of stuff like that in there that's not happy. And it's, you know, that's the thing. A traditional comic book is very black and white, you know, good and evil, right and wrong, hero and villain. That is along the lines of most traditional books. And in ours, we have no heroes. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, no nudity, I'm out. But anyway.
The monster's nude.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. All right.
But he's made of like trees and leaves and thorns and anger.
I'm sure that works for a lot of people.
There's somebody out there that's into it, man.
You know it.
There's somebody for everyone.
So we're getting an hour, guys. So as we're wrapping it up, question that I don't think I asked you guys when you were on the first time. This is kind of something I've been doing the last year or so. I always like to end with this question, which is, how do you measure success?
Well, that's a good question.
I got that. I got, for me at least. So when I was a kid, I always told people, because they wanted to know why I wanted to do comics. And I said, you know what? Honestly, if somebody can read something that I've written or that I've co-written in this case, and if they can lose themselves from all the crap that's going on in the world, all the garbage that we're seeing, and there's a lot of it going on right now, if they can lose themselves for a half an hour, 45 minutes in something I've written, I'm successful. Bottom line, that's all it is. And money comes and goes. I've had a lot of money. I've had no money, you know, but this right here, that's your success. If somebody, we had a kid walk up to the table and he told me that his friend told him to come buy the 3 issues of Blood and Dust because it's the best thing he's ever read. So this is an 18-year-old kid telling another 18-year-old kid with all the things that are out there right now for them to look at that this is the best thing he's ever read.
I'd like to give reference to say we don't believe that because there ain't no way we've ever written the best comic books ever.
But to him, he
but
did.
It's awesome to hear somebody say
but
that.
But to that kid, we did. We actually, to that kid, what he read was the best thing ever. And you know what? For me, the best thing that I ever read, somebody else might look at it like it's trash. But at the end of the day, that to me is success.
Right.
And I would say for me, we've already got it. Financially, I would sure like to get my money I've invested in this book back. That would make me and it would certainly make my wife feel like I'm a success, believe me. But the fact that we've had so many people read this book and absolutely love it.
Come back for it.
That literally we've had fans come back every con that we've been at trying to get more issues and more stuff from it. The comments, the reviews, the fact that our book is coming out on a publisher, I won. We definitely count that a success. Everything else after this point is complete gravy, man. I mean, we want every single person that hears this to go and ask to put us on your pull list. That is success. That is how I measure success, is that every single time somebody reads our book, if they come back and say, this was freaking cool, or you did something that I never expected, or there was something done here that I've never seen, and that's freaking awesome. That is success for us. And so we're already successful. We're good. Everything at this point is gravy.
Cool. That great answers. Before we go, where can people find you online and where can they find the book?
So they can find the book in their local comic book store. So if you go to your local store or your online retailer and ask to have Blood and Dust, The Life and Undeath of Judd Glenny put on your pull list. It's from Action Lab for their Danger Zone imprint. You can find us at bloodanddustcomic.com, facebook.com/nightshadecomics. I'm at Blood and Dust. Adam is at Nightshade Comics.
You can find us on Facebook too. Adam J. Orndorff and
Michael R. Martin.
Yeah, Michael R. Martin.
So Instagram, basically, you know, social media is normal stuff.
Everything's linked through.
Yeah, come find us on all of that stuff.
You find one, you're going to find all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So to our listeners, thanks for listening, and definitely go check these guys out. And like I said in the beginning, it's always great to have a guest come back and hear that, you know, they're being successful in what they're doing. Thanks, guys, for coming back and doing the show.
Well, thanks for having us back, man. We really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun the first time. We're thrilled to have be able to come back again.
Yeah, thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Cool, thanks. And as always, boys and girls, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week.